Blog Talk Radio.
Take back control.
and gentlemen, welcome to the Rifleman Radio Show. And as always, here at the Rifleman Radio Show, we're dedicated to bringing you the absolute best information possible on rifle marksmanship, self-reliance, prepping, first aid, and certainly all the things that you and I can do to ensure that we safeguard the freedoms and liberties that living in this nation affords us, because this nation is, even with everything that's going on, this nation is different than almost every other nation in the world. And if we're going to keep the freedoms and liberties that we have, we're going to have to work at this. It's not... The machine has been running pretty smoothly for a couple of hundred years, and every once in a while it needs some maintenance, some TLC, and that's where we are now. Our nation is desperately in need of maintenance and TLC, and I'll tell you that, and I've mentioned this to you guys before, that you know, I thought for many years, I thought that I'm a veteran. I served my nation. Went overseas. I paid my debt. So that should be, that means I should get, a free ride for the rest of my time in the country, right? That's what I thought for a long time. So I felt, I did my job. I did my nasty, dirty job, and now I deserve my free ride. And I certainly look back on that now and think about how stupid that is and about how much time I wasted when I could have been putting in my efforts to help preserve our nation's freedoms and liberties. Nobody gets a free ride. All right. Nobody gets a free ride, no matter what you've done. It's not enough. It's never enough. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that what you've personally done is not enough. I'm just saying that the preservation of our freedom and liberty takes precedence over everything else. And it is not going to do it by itself. And you certainly can't let someone else take care of it. It's a non-delegatable responsibility. It falls squarely on each and every one of our individual heads. You can't say, I'm going to let my dad, he's always interested in this. He's always talking about politics and everything else. I'm going to let him take care of it because, you know, he's good at that. You can't do that. You can't let anybody else shoulder the responsibility for you. You have to do it yourself. You have to get involved in some form or fashion. I don't mean that you have to become a lobbyist or a senator or a governor. Certainly you can if that's your aspiration, then please have at it full speed. But that's not what's necessary. What's necessary is for you to understand that you have this responsibility and be constantly looking for ways to fulfill your duty to the nation. And I don't mean your duty to the party. I'm talking about your duty to the nation, your duty to the Constitution. Those are the documents that make this what it is, up above a landform floating on the ocean. You need to find your way that you can plug yourself in to help support, help defend the freedoms and liberties that we enjoy by virtue of living in this nation. And there are thousands of ways to do this. I'm not going to go through. I'm not going to go through them tonight. I'm sure that a lot of times you guys get probably get raggedy from listening to me tell you this. Well, the reason I go over it again and again is because it's so important. Without every one of us standing on the wall is going to come crashing down. And, you know, it may do so regardless. It may do so anyway, even with all of us up there. But at least you'll have at least some satisfaction of knowing that you did everything you could to prevent the tidal wave of chaos if you were fulfilling your responsibilities. I remember a long time ago whenever I first joined the Appleseed Project, and one of the guys I met there, his name was Ron, and we had several long discussions. And time, there was a lot going on at the time in the nation, and there was a lot of worries, and a lot of folks were saying, why are you guys working so hard to try and prop up what appears to be a failing system? And Ron's answer to it was that if at some horrible point in the future, if you're forced to take up arms to defend your freedoms, then you should only do so after knowing that you've done every single thing in your power to do it, to correct this in a nonviolent way. And I completely agree with that. You can go across the internet any minute of any hour of any day, and you will certainly see the bylines, the tags on people saying the slogans of "you can pry it from my cold dead hands" and the sentiment of the idea that they're willing to fight in a violent way, in a real real blood and guts type situation to defend their freedoms. And my point is this, is that this is, our nation was founded with the principles and the documents that we would never have to do that again. After we did it in 1775, that we would never have to do that again. That's why so much care was gone, so much work was gone into in crafting these documents, so that we wouldn't have to do that again. You shouldn't wait to say once the war of bullets begins, then I'm going to throw myself into it full on. I'm really going to get cracking then, because the time to do something about it is before the full-on war comes. That's when you want to fix it. And that's what we want to do. God forbid that we should ever be put in a situation again where violence is the only recourse that we have. I know a lot of people think that's where we're at now, but we're not. And we should be working as hard as we can to ensure that we don't slide down into that type of position. All right, tonight we're going to be talking about beginning your preps. Now, this is another thing that I'm sure you guys probably get tired of hearing me harp on, but I'm not going to stop, all right? So you might as well just sit back and listen, because I'm never going to stop on this. This is also part of your duty to yourself, your loved ones, and your nation, just as much as working on protecting the freedoms that you enjoy is the responsibility that you have to making sure that you are prepared to care for yourself and for your loved ones, because that's also a big chunk of taking care of your nation. If you're able to take care of yourself and your loved ones, then you have become a positive force in the nation. You're not a negative force. By negative force, including not just the folks who are running around and looting and burning. I'm also including the folks that are standing on top of their house with the big save me signs around their necks, because that's a negative part of the nation. That's a negative impact. Somebody's going to have to go and find and take care of them. Somebody's going to have to rescue them and care for them. You don't want to be in that position. Not for yourself, not for your family and your loved ones, all right? And I don't think, I probably don't have to tell you, but I'm going to tell you anyway, that you want to stay away from as much as possible and have no contact with as much as possible the forces for the government, for law enforcement, and everything else in any type of a disaster situation, all right? The farther away you stay from any type of government forces, the better off you are. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is by making sure that you're not going to have to go to them begging for their assistance. All right? So how are we going to do that? Because there's nobody. Well, there may be some folks that... if you subscribe to the, I don't know what you would call it, the New World Order theories, and I'm not blasting anybody that does. I'm just saying I don't know enough about any of that, and I really don't think anybody else does either. But maybe somebody somewhere, one of those guys knows that at some point they're going to pull the plug on something and cause the whole world's economy to come crashing down on a certain date. Other than that, nobody can tell you when it's going to happen. It's just going to be like the return of Christ. Nobody's going to be able to tell you when that's happening. But you better be ready for it if it happens, right? So how are you going to do this? Because... and I'm not going to say as Americans, because this is not just an American thing. It's a whole world thing. It's a whole human race thing. We, as a species, we very seldom ever make any large moves or do anything to try and change anything we're doing if it is chugging along okay. As a species, I think we mostly assume that if everything is okay now, everything's going to be okay tomorrow and the day after and the day after. And if something needs to be changed, well, we'll talk about the fact that something needs to be changed, but we won't do anything about it until it comes crashing down on top of us and we're forced to do it. That's just the way that most humans are. And you'll have to try and fight that, because in the event that something does happen, and I can guarantee you one thing for sure. I can't tell you when something's going to happen by any means, but I can tell you this. There is a very, very huge possibility that during your lifetime, you are going to experience some type of man-made or natural disaster, some type of cessation of services event, and it may be an hour, it may be a day, a week, or it may end up being forever. But at some point, you're going to experience something. So you can't wait until you think that the odds are that it's something is getting ready to happen, because the majority of these events come out of nowhere. Now, you can usually see when a hurricane will pop up, and they'll say, look, guys, we think a hurricane is going to hit you in the next 3 or 4 days, right? And it may or it may not. But even if you have 3 or 4 days, I can tell you from experience that that's not enough time to really prepare for something that might pass right by you without touching you, or may destroy your whole city, such as recently happened up north and happened in Louisiana. If you wait, even if you're just even if you think you have 3 or 4 days and you can do something with the oncoming hurricane, like I said, I can tell you from experience is that that the minute that they announce the hurricane, people start flooding into the stores. They get all the food, all the batteries, all the flashlights, all the generators, all the gas cans, everything. Like a big herd of locusts, they sweep through there and they clean it out. And then once it's been all either back on the market or it rots in their garage or they throw it away, you don't want to be a part of that. And the only way not to be a part of that is to realize that becoming self-reliant and building and maintaining your preps is not something that you do on when the sirens are coming, when you hear the sirens, the civil defense sirens. It's something that you do as part of a lifestyle. And the time to begin is now, today, tonight, tomorrow on your way home from work. That's when you get started. And you don't have to, I've told you guys this before too, because when I talk to people about this occasionally, a lot of times the answer that I'll get back is, man, I really want to do that. I really want to get that year's worth of food for my family and stuff, but I just don't have the money right now. You know, it's going to be for the whole family. There's 4 of us. It's going to be about $6,000 for me to get, everything I need. So I'm just going to have to wait till I can get some money put away for that. And everybody knows that getting this stuff someday is never going to happen, right? It's just not going to happen. And that's certainly a good goal to go to is a year's worth of food. But why would you wait until you can do that? Well, you can start tomorrow. You can go get you a day's worth of food tomorrow, tonight, and put it up and start figuring this thing out and start working on it bit by bit. That's what I want folks to understand, is this isn't something that has to be done all in one chunk. Recently I had someone contact me and ask me about if I had any type of a list of preps and stuff like that. And I said, yeah, certainly, I'll be glad to give you, you know, a copy of one of the lists that I keep. You know, I try and find out where they were living, what they were doing, so that I could figure out kind of what they would need. Now, your own individual preps are going to be just that, your own individual preps. They're going to be determined by your needs. If you're one person, you don't need food for a family of four. And if you're a family of four, food for one person isn't going to be that great of a solution. So it's going to be determined by your needs, where you live, what you do, the probability of something happening to you, et cetera, stuff like that. Anyway, I gave him the list, and a note I got back said, man, I'm just floored. There's no way I'll be able to get all this stuff. You know, there's no way I'll be able to get it all. It's like $8,000 or $9,000 worth of stuff, and I can't afford it. And I wrote back, I didn't tell you that this is the only way you're going to survive is by buying everything on this list. You had just asked me for a list of stuff that I need to be looking at for a self-reliant situation. This is a list. And you're certainly not required to get everything on there. You're required to get the things on there that you can afford now and that you'll most immediately need, and you'll just need to go buy it as you prepare your own individual list of things. You'll need to go down the list and and start acquiring stuff as you can. So if you're going to get started today, you need to take a look at your own individual situation and determine what are the things that you need that you absolutely must have to make sure that you have water, food, shelter, security, and energy. What are the things that you need right this minute in order to cover those bases? Maybe you already have a house. Okay, great. There's something off the list right there. You've got some shelter. Because no matter where it is, it's shelter. Right? No matter whether you think you'd want to stay there for any length of period or not, it is what it is, and that is its shelter. So you need to start looking at the things that you would need. And the way that I always tell you guys that you should be looking at it is pretty much in that order, but you look at it not as how am I going to survive for the rest of eternity. What do I need to get so that I can survive, for the next 10 years without any assistance? You start off very, very simple. You just say, what do I need so that tomorrow I'll be okay? What do I need? And we know that the first thing you're going to need is the thing that you absolutely must have. As long as the weather and everything else is fine, there's going to be water, right? You can go up to 30 days or so without food. People have gone longer, and they've perished from shorter. But about 30 days, you could theoretically survive without food, but you're never going to make it anywhere near that long without water. You're going to have water, and the water needs to be good, clean, water. So what can you do to make sure that you have a day or two of water? You can go and you can buy bottled water, and you can in your home, and it's not hard to do. You can go and get you a couple of cases of bottled water. It's inexpensive. Now, when I say expensive, it's really not inexpensive if you look at it. It's bottled water is more expensive a lot of times than gasoline or milk. But if you buy it in bulk, you can get around some of that. You can get enough water for your for you and your family to survive for a day or two. All right, that can be your start off goal. And you want your approximately 1 gallon per person per day, and that's determined by a person not doing physical activity in the shade in relatively light weather conditions, like say, you know, 80 degrees in the shade, not doing work. You need about a gallon per person per day, okay? So that's going to be your starting point. Even if you don't want to go and buy water, and we've discussed water several times on the show, I'm not going to go into it in depth, but I will tell you that if you don't want to buy water, then it's not that hard at all to save some jugs and get water from your tap. Right now, you know that the water from your tap, in most cases, is good, clean, safe water. Get some type of a receptacle to hold it. You can take gallon milk jugs and rinse them out real good, a little bit of Clorox, rinse them out, and then put the water in those and store those. You can, if you've got somebody that drinks a lot of bottled water, you can ask them to save their bottled water containers for you, and you can just rinse those out and fill them and stack them, all right? Right out of the faucet, and the water will keep good, and you start that off and make sure that you have, whatever your goal is going to be, make it an easy attainable goal. I tell folks to start off with 1 day, because most people can get themselves squared away for 1 day pretty easily. That way, there's not any type of anxiety over an unattainable goal. Get yourself squared away with some water, all right? And then food. Most people will have more than a day's worth of food in their refrigerators, in their pantries and stuff. But the trend in this country has been that because it's so easy to get food, that people don't keep much more than 5 to 7 days of food in their home. And a lot of people, and believe me, I know this because I've been to their houses and seen it, don't keep more than a couple of days of food. It's a bad habit to get into. And like I said, it's not because the zombies are coming or the or asteroids or stuff like that. It's because you're almost always guaranteed to have something, a snowstorm, a flood, tornadoes, hurricanes, trucker strikes, you name it. Something is always happening, right? Without any undertones of darkness or conspiracy or anything like that, something is always happening. That's just that's the world that we live in. Something is always happening. There's a lot of rains, there's floods, there's brush fires, there's tornadoes, hurricanes. So there's always the possibility that you'll be stuck for 2 or 3 or 4 days or more without being able to go to a store to get more food. So the folks that are only keeping a day or 2 days or less of food in their home, you're really taking on really unnecessary chances, because right now, and I say right now because I personally believe we're on the brink of a terrible event concerning our nation's food sources and stuff like that. That right now it's very inexpensive for you to get a pretty decent amount of food that you can put away for very little actual dollars. I mean, we're living in a time of plenty right now. Even though prices on things like meat and stuff like that have really gone up, we're still living in a time of plenty here. So for you to have only a day or two's worth of food in your house, if you have a family, is criminal. If you're by yourself and that's what you want to do, okay. As long as you don't have that mentality that a lot of people have, which is, if I run out of food and stuff, I've got all kinds of guns and stuff I'll use to get more food, because that is a criminal act too, and that makes you one of the negatives. And you can easily get around that by beginning your prep now and making sure that you have enough food to take care of yourself. Now, if you've got a family, like I said, and you don't do this, then that, to me, also is criminal. So how are you going to do this? How are you going to get some food? How are you going to put it away? Well, first off, the food, that's another thing I hear from folks, too, when I talk to them about making sure that they've started their food prep. They say, well, you know, I really want to do that, but I can't afford the long-term food yet, and I keep meaning to buy those food prep containers and some Mylar bags, stuff I just keep forgetting. So I'm just going to wait until I get that, and then I'll do it. Why? Why would you wait and do that? And you look into people's food pantries, and they may have some food in there that's been on the shelf for a year or more, or 2 years. If you go to my dad's house, you may find a can of turkey chili that's been sitting there for 9 years. So if you go to my dad's house, make sure that you look at the date on the can before you eat it, all right? Otherwise, you'll be sitting there eating it, thinking about how horrible it tastes and not knowing why until you get through and you look at the can and it's 9 years old, all right? The reason I say this is because that food has been sitting there. It didn't kill me, but it had been sitting there for 9 years. So you don't need don't put all of these blocks in front of you to say I would do it if I had these other things in place so that I could do it, I would go ahead and do it. There's no need to wait. A bag of rice, as long as you don't have any vermin in your house, a bag of rice will sit there in that little flimsy plastic bag on the shelf in your pantry, will sit there for 2 or 3 years. So will the bags of beans that you put up. So will the other cans of food that you catch on sale at Walmart or HEB or Target, wherever you go. And that's what you should be doing, is going and waiting for some of this stuff to go on sale. And when I say waiting, I don't mean waiting a year. I just mean waiting to go and get the canned yams. Waiting until Wednesday, because that's when they go on sale at HEB. I don't mean waiting too long. I just mean be a smart shopper. Look through the flyers that they put out. And say, okay, they have lowered the price on these canned yams to 60 cents a can, because they want me to come in and get those canned yams and fill up my basket with other stuff. And instead of doing that, you just look at the specific things that they have on sale, and you go and pick up those things that are on sale or that the prices are comparable to other locations, and you do your shopping and pick the stuff up then. You pick up those canned yams. And let me tell you something else, too, real quick. When you're buying food to put away, certainly it's hard to get around buying some of the stuff that you can get very inexpensively in bulk. I'm talking about stuff like rice and beans. Everybody talks about that. Rice and beans. Got to get my rice and beans. That's great, because the rice is usually fairly inexpensive. It's getting more and more expensive. If you've been buying rice lately, you'll see it's gotten more expensive, so are the beans. But you can still buy them in bulk, rather inexpensively at most of the locations that you go to. Just go to the grain section, and you look on the very bottom shelf down there, and they'll have the 5, 10, 15, 20-pound bags of rice and beans. They may even have some 30-pound bags. So you can still buy those pretty expensively, and I would advise you to get rice and beans. But one of the things that I want to tell you is that when you're buying your prep items, you want to buy the stuff that you eat, the stuff that you normally eat. The whole idea of trying to live a lifestyle where you include prepping in it is that this isn't just for the end of the world. This is how you're going to shop from now on, not just for the zombies, but for your everyday regular eating habits and stuff. So when you buy stuff, you're going to buy it, the stuff that you normally eat. Because the other thing about this is the last thing you want at the end of the world is be eating stuff that you don't like, right? If you don't like yams, then even though they're on sale, maybe you don't want to buy the yams. Pick out something else. Pick out something that you like, that you can have a decent meal, even if it's at the end of the world. And certainly some of the stuff, I guess, could be used as barter items, but think about buying the stuff that you're going to eat, because that's what we want you to do. We don't want you to buy a year's worth of food and put it in the closet in your pantry and say, "Well, I'm not touching that because that's my ticket. That's my lifeline there." Because if these zombies don't come in a year, and it turns into 2 years and 3 years, then that food that you've been putting away is going to start getting older. It's going to start losing, certainly, if not its nutritional value, it's going to start losing. It's going to be becoming less and less palatable, right? So what we want you to do is to eat out of your preps. And that doesn't mean buying a year of stuff and then eating for a year without buying anything else until you're through and then buying another year. What we mean is that when you go to the store and you love those yams, if you normally buy a can of yams for the week, this, when you go next time, you're going to buy 2 cans of yams. Right? You're going to buy 2 cans of yams, and then you're going to store them up. And you'll eat that 1 can of yams that you normally eat, but then the other one is going to remain as part of your prep. And every time you get something, every time you purchase something, you're going to have your Sharpie marker right there in the pantry with you. And when you purchase it, you're going to, now I noticed that one of the people in the chat room said, be sure and check the dates on the MREs you purchase, and that's a great idea. But go ahead and check the dates on everything you purchase before you leave the aisle where you're buying it. All right, take a look at the can, the date on the can or whatever, and make sure that the can that's at the front of the line doesn't have a date on it that is 60 days older than the next cans 3 rows back, right? I always take a look at the cans of stuff or anything that I'm buying. I'll take a look at the one in the front row, and I'll take one from the second, third, fourth, fifth row back. Take a look at that date. Because the store is always trying to sell their oldest first, which is what they're supposed to do. So they'll have the oldest stuff on the front of the row. Make sure you take a look at the dates on this as when you're purchasing it. So to give yourself an extra buffer, whatever it is, if the cans of food 3 or 4 rows back are 30 or 60 days fresher, then get those and put them in. All right. And when you get home, you take your Sharpie marker and you mark on the cans, on the bags, whatever, the date of purchase. As you are eating, during the course of your regular life, you're going to eat the oldest first, and you're going to keep adding to your prep by putting it into the bag. Now, there's a lot of great products for this, for canned goods and stuff like that. They've got, there's a company called Shelf Reliance, And they make some really great products if you want to stock cans and stuff, because the way they have it set up is it's like a little can dispenser. And you put the cans in the top, and they're held in a vertical fashion. And then there's one that's dispensed out of the bottom. And so the oldest cans are the ones that are gonna come out first. That's the oldest can. The newest ones are going to be, you'll be putting in after time. You still put your dates on them. And you eat out of your prep, right? If you like peanut butter, when you go to the store, and you don't do this all at once. You don't have to go to the store and say, all right, normally my grocery bill is $150 a week. This week, though, I'm gonna have to start pushing up to $300. So they got to double it every week I go now. You don't have to do that. You just pick certain items, and you start doubling those up. You don't have to do every single item every week you go or every month you go, whatever your schedule. But you do want to start doubling up on some of the things that you eat a lot of. If you eat a lot of peanut butter, even if you don't, peanut butter is a really good thing to keep on hand. But you're going to buy the can that you usually eat during the week, and then you're going to buy one more on top of that. And you'll do this every time you go to the grocery store. You'll pick something that that you eat, and then you're going to buy double up on it. And you're not going to wait three more weeks to resupply yourself with it. Next time you'll go ahead and you'll buy your can next time. That just gives you one extra can of whatever it is in that rotation. It gives you one extra one, so that you're going to slowly be doing this to be building up your reserve as you go along. This is part of living a self-reliant lifestyle. You'll be adding to your prep. Every time you go to the store, you'll add additional amounts. You're going to be buying a little bit more than you need to make it through the week, and that surplus then is going to be added to your prep. And then you're going to eat out of your prep as you go along to ensure that you are constantly rotating through your stock and that you're eating the oldest first and that you're adding, your fresh stuff that you're adding is going to the end of the line. That's how you're going to maintain and build your prep. Now, if you want, certainly wouldn't hurt to go and make a decent buy this week of some extra stuff. Now, there's stuff that I buy almost every time I go that I'll buy some extra of. There are things like salt. Now, you can buy salt in bulk from the salt manufacturers. If you don't want to do it that way, you can certainly pick it up on sale at your stores. I'll usually always buy 4 to 5 pounds of salt whenever I go to the store. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll buy it in the 1 pound containers, because that's just that's a good way to purchase it. It's fairly inexpensive. You can buy the 1 pound containers usually for about 39 cents. And I also will put one of those containers usually inside of a 5 gallon bucket that I'm closing up for storage. I'll keep a pound of salt in almost all the containers. Buy an extra container of salt whenever I go, and they stack very easily too in your cabinets, and it's easy to hand away the 1 pound round in a cardboard container as a barter item. Then I'll also grab, I'm looking at my family likes ramen. They're not big on rice and beans. I bought them anyway. They're not big on them. They do like ramen, so I'll make sure that I pick up usually a case or so of ramen when I go. I can put a case of ramen in the single-serving ramens. I can put a case of ramen, a pound of salt, and the rest of the spices, because I always try and put spices in all of the containers But I can put a case of ramen and the spices into 1 5-gallon can and lock it up. And then that's 1 case of 48 single servings, every time I go. You can pick up the rice and beans. So buying a couple of cases of ramen, 20 pounds of rice, 20 pounds of beans, and some salt, putting it away on one of your first purchases, there's no problem with that. It's not going to break the bank, and that gives you a little bit of a jump. And then you're going to continually add to it as you're going along on your prepping, the way that you've set up your prepping lifestyle, all right? Okay, and I would also grab things, and you can, a lot of stuff that is bulk item, a lot of times it doesn't go on sale, it just hovers at a pretty decent price. But getting stuff that's not going to go bad very quickly, that you're going to use fairly often, is a good idea. The rice and the beans, like I said, they'll store just on your shelf. You don't have to shelf. You don't have to get Mylar and food grade plastic buckets to ensure that nothing goes wrong with it. It's great if you can, but don't let that stand in your way. Don't make that an obstacle for you to have to surmount before you get it. You can get the rice and the beans. You can get the bulk pasta. Pasta is always good. Got a lot of carbs in it. You can buy the bulk pasta. You can put it in Tupperware containers if you need to. You can very easily get started on this, and you can make it almost a game. You know, you make it a game where you're doing your best to find the lowest prices, and you are figuring out new inexpensive ways to do this. And it's certainly great if you're a family and you have either a significant other or kids that you can help, that can also get involved with this, and you can make it part of a family project. And they can get kind of excited about helping you look for items or ways to store the food and stuff like that. It certainly helps. I know it's hard if your significant other is not on the boat with you on this. But even if they're not, you got to do it anyway, right? All right, so you're going to make sure that you've got getting your water, which is, like I said, is not that hard. You can buy the bottled water. You can get containers. You can go to the stores, and they'll sell you the 5-gallon screw-on-top lids, the clear plastic ones that they use for your water machines. You can get those. You can fill those up, keep them in your garage or in your closet. You can start getting the food now and buying just a little bit extra when you go to get your weekly food. Storing it away, your shelter. If you have a home, then you've got a home. That's your, for right then and there at that moment, that's what you'll consider to be your shelter, and you won't worry about that right now because you have shelter. That's going to be your home. You can start working on shelter as it comes up again down the line in your prepping and self-reliance path. Your security. And this is going to be different for everybody. I would certainly advise you to acquire some type of a firearm for your for defense of yourself and your family. And when we talk about firearms, we're not don't jump to the end of the line and start thinking that you're going to have to, shoot massive amounts of zombies and intruders and stuff like that. Who knows? You may have to. I don't know. But you don't have to think of it that way, at least not at the beginning. But you can certainly acquire something that could help you by putting down a rabid dog that had gotten into your yard. Or because there are certainly plenty of examples of animals not being taken care of whenever something happens. You know, something happens to the owners, and they either perish or they leave. They don't take their animals with them. The animals have to fend for themselves, and they very rapidly form packs, and people aren't getting their shots, and on. So I don't want you to immediately start thinking of having to defend yourself from hordes of zombies. But you do need to understand that the real world is a dangerous place, and if it's not right now for you specifically, it can certainly become one, right? And in the defense of yourself and your family, as Colt said, the firearm is a great equalizer. You know, maybe you're some kind of a fourth or fifth degree high level black belt or something like that, and you say, well, I'll just use my mad karate skills to defend my family and stuff like that. If need be, I'm not going to use a firearm. Well, that's good. I mean, that's good to have that to fall back on. But if you're using your mad skills of karate and you get injured doing so, then how is that helping? That's if you're successful. How is that helping anybody? All right? There are thousands of reasons for you to have a firearm, and these are the good reasons. So my suggestion would be, if it's legal to do so in your state, and certainly you're going to need to check all the applicable state and local laws, because there's still plenty of places in the United States where having a firearm is illegal for you, and the only people that obey the laws are the people that obey the laws. So before you get a firearm, check your state and local laws, make sure that it's legal, and then go and talk to some folks. Don't just rush out and buy something. Find somebody that you know that has some shooting experience, and ask them if they would mind taking you and showing you some of the rifles that they have, or some of the pistols or shotguns, and letting you shoot them. Most people that own firearms are more than happy to do this. They love the excuse of doing this. So, one of the people in the chat room said they don't know anyone who can catch a bullet. Well, that's not quite true, because most people can catch one. You just can't catch it without it causing some damage, right? Let them show you some of the rifles and pistols, shotguns that they have. Let them do some shooting with some. Find something that you're comfortable with and that is applicable to your situation, and then make the decision to either purchase a firearm or not. But like I said, I would advise you to do so, because there are many reasons to do it. and it doesn't just have, the majority of them don't have anything to do with shooting somebody else. All right? Like I said, there's the ability for you to harvest food with them, to keep wild or diseased animals off your family. And just so that you know, the majority of instances in America, and the statistics say that between the low level of 900,000 and the high level of 2.5 million times that crimes are stopped with a firearm, in the majority of those cases, the firearm was not actually fired. It was simply produced, or the threat of the firearm being produced was used, right? And that's what prevented the crimes. So I would advise you to acquire one if it's legal for you to do so. You can get some very decent home self-defense firearms fairly inexpensively. You can check the pawn shops in your city, your town, see what they have. You can buy something new fairly inexpensively. You can buy a nice, decent 22 caliber semi-automatic rifle for around $150, right? And then once you have it, then the next thing to do is to take some type of instruction so that you'll understand how to use the firearm safely and competently. I wrote about this just the other day on a blog post about training, because we've got our company, Battle Road USA, and you can go to our website, battleroadusa.com, and you can see the training that we have available, and we also have the blog there, and the blog covers everything under the sun, from shooting to canning and everything else. And if you have something that you want to add to the blog, just send it to me, and we'll talk about adding you on as a guest writer on the blog. But I was writing, talking about training and the fact that there's the problem that so many people will get their CHL or they'll get a firearm and they will consider the subject of self-defense, the question of self-defense, to be answered. That's it. They got the firearm, they got their CHL, that's all they needed. And that's certainly not the case. I think a lot of people just think that just having the firearm has some type of a magical or mystical, becomes some kind of a talisman for them. And because they have the firearm, nothing bad will happen to them. There's no real need to learn how to use it, because just the fact that they own one now prevents anything bad from happening to them. And that's a problem, because a lot of people actually do think that. A lot of people actually feel that way. They'll get the firearm, but they won't get any training for it. And I always tell them not to be upset, not to be surprised when that firearm does not leap out of their underwear drawer and save them, because it's not going to, right? You are going to have to understand how to use it. And not just that, you're going to have to develop the mindset to use it. You're going to have to understand how to use it, when to use it, and then you're going to have to develop the mindset to use it. when it's needed. The number of people, and I've personally seen this happen, and I've seen it on YouTube. I've read the story of it happening over and over. Certainly you see it in movies, and I'm not telling you that movies are where the truth lies. I'm just saying that a lot of times the reason they have it in movies is because that's what happened in real life. But you'll see the firearms owner will be using a firearm for self-defense. They'll be pointing it at the bad guy and saying, "Don't you come any closer. Don't you come any closer, I'll shoot." And the bad guy keeps coming closer and closer, and they keep threatening, and he keeps coming closer, and they keep threatening. And pretty soon he's standing there, and he's got his hand on their gun, and he takes it out of their hand. When I'm talking about the mindset, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not telling you that you have to become a hardened killer, like what the guy's name in Full Metal Jacket, Gomer Pyle. You don't have to become a hardened killer like Gomer Pyle. But what you have to do is you have to understand the rules, the dance, that this situation, how it works out. If you are in enough of a dangerous situation where you consider your life to be at risk, and you have already produced a firearm, you've pointed it at an individual, and you've told them that you feel that your life is threatened and that you're going to shoot them if they don't stop, and they don't stop, then when you have to decide in your mind, before this happens, I don't mean you have to decide when it's going on, you have to decide before this ever happens. You have to walk through it in your head and say, all right, here's what I'm going to do. If I tell them to stop or I'll shoot, then when they take that step toward me, I'm going to shoot. And that's what I'm going to do. Do it in your mind. You have to play it out. And you have to come to the decision to do it, regardless of how you personally feel about violence or a situation where you're forced to defend yourself. This has to be worked out ahead of time, and you have to make the decision ahead of time of what you're going to do. Otherwise, they'll just keep walking up to you, and they'll take the firearm from you, and that's it. That's the mindset that I'm talking about. So these are some things that you've got to figure out and you've got to work through once you decide to become a responsible firearms owner. And I already said I think it's a decision that you should consider. Each and every person will have to decide for themselves what's right for them. I'm not going to tell you it's something you have to do. You don't have to do it. You don't have to have any kind of firearm. You could have a club or a stick or mace or anything else. Disadvantage because the firearm is going to be at the top of the pyramid, right? So that means that no matter where you are, you won't be at the top of the pyramid if you don't have one. So once you acquire a firearm, the very next thing you should do is to acquire instruction in the use of the firearm. I would include with that going to some, if you haven't already done so, to going to some type of a self-defense course so that you can begin to understand the things that are needed for you to properly defend yourself and your loved ones, and that is things like situational awareness, safety in your home, keeping your door locked, safety in your travels, the things that you should be doing. I'm not just talking about at the end of the world. I'm talking about the same thing I was talking about a few minutes ago, which is living in a prepping lifestyle. I'm talking about the thing that you should be doing every day. Things like when you've gotten your groceries at the store and you're walking back to your car, that you don't have your head buried in your portable interweb device. Situational awareness. You should get some type of instruction or training in this so you can begin practicing it every day, not just at the end of the world, but every day. All right? This is going to be part of your security. Now, it's not all of your security by any means. Just because you have a firearm doesn't mean you're going to neglect things like making sure you have good locks on all your doors and windows, that you're not practicing situational awareness, that you're not sure that you have outdoor lighting that shines on where you get out of your car and stuff like that. That's all stuff that you need to learn. You need to continue learning. I'm just saying that you need to begin learning it now and practicing it now. This is, if the zombies do come, there's going to be too much going on for you to try and figure out all this stuff at once, right? You need to be figuring this stuff out while it's still relatively peaceful and safe and law-abiding, right? To the degree that it is. You can still very easily get killed, robbed, raped, murdered, assaulted, just about any day of the week, just about anywhere you are, right? That's the world that we live in. All right, but you're going to be working on this. You're going to be working on your security, right? That's part of the five legs of the five-legged survival stool. That is water, food, shelter, security, safety. Now, they're not always in that order, but it's close. Water, food, shelter, security, and energy. So, what would you do about energy? Now, if you leave... I've got a bunch of little puppies running around here. They're just like little barracudas. We've got a mouthful of brand new teeth, and they have to show them to every single thing that they can. They want to put those teeth in everything that they can put it in, including all of the cords and all the electric stuff. You need to look at your energy uses. Now, I think one of the best ways to do this is by having an example day, and that's where you shut the power off to your house, and you live a day like that, and you see what it is that the fact that everything you do uses some form of energy, and then you figure out some way to get around the fact that perhaps the utility companies and such are not going to be supplying it to you. You can have a lights out day or even a lights out weekend, and find out what. And when you do this, I would say go ahead and make sure that you add all of the utilities together. It means your electricity, your water, your gas, and just see what it's like not to have them at the end of your finger like you usually do. There have been times where we've had electrical outages here, or maybe I've been working on the water. We're on a water well, but maybe I've been working on the water. Maybe the power's out, and I can't tell you. I have to laugh at myself over and over the number of times that my hand will hit the switch to turn on the light, or will hit the water to turn on the water to wash my hands. not just once or twice. I'll do it all day long. You know, I'll walk in the house knowing that the water is turned off, and walk over and hit the faucet to wash my hands. And you will do this, you know, you may do it 100 times during the course of the day, on a full-length day, where you hit a turn on a light. You click on a button to turn on the radio or the TV. You turn the faucet on. You want to flush the toilet. All of this stuff. You can see very quickly how a cessation of services event is going to affect you, and how the things that you will need to do if you no longer have these utilities available to you. We already talked about the water, so we won't go into that. We've already talked about the need for you to have water available. You can listen to the shows in the archives, or we'll go over water again probably in the next 6 or 7 weeks, because I want to add some more details to it. So we'll do have a show devoted to water, things like water purification devices, storage, etc., harvesting rainwater, stuff like that. Let's just talk for now about like electricity and gas, because those are going to be the things that you'll have to worry about, even if you do have a large amount of water that you've set aside for yourself and your family. So how are you going to cook your meals? How are you going to see at night? What are the things that you're going to do that are going to make life livable for you? And there's a lot of different things that then you can start looking at. One would be to purchase some type of a gas cooking device, you know, and it doesn't have to be like a big grill or anything. You can get like the small single burner type appliances from a lot of different places, sporting good places and stuff like that. And that's a device. It's just like a one single burner. And you can use that to heat food, to cook your food and stuff like that. And usually those things will run on either a propane canister, the kind that you can buy and screw in. If you want to make sure that you're able to do it for a little while, you can, instead of getting the small screw-in containers, you can also get the big, I don't even remember now what the size of them are. I've got a bunch of them, but the big propane cylinders that you can buy at the grocery stores. All right, and you can have several of those available. But at the same time, if you have a gas grill, you can use that to cook your meals on. What about lighting? All right. One of the things that I've done is I've got purchased several of the new Coleman lanterns. They've got the type now that will run on any type of fuel. You can even burn gasoline. You can use gasoline to run your Coleman lantern, and which is good because odds are that while you may not be able to find the regular Coleman fuel, you can usually find some gasoline somewhere, in the gas tank of a car, you know, somewhere you'll find some gasoline that you can use to power your Coleman light. What I do is Coleman lanterns, the gas Coleman lanterns, the multi-fuel Coleman lanterns. And there's difference. So you've got the multi-fuels are going to be a little bit more expensive. They're about $40 to $50 a piece. But like I said, having the ability to burn multiple types of fuel in them is probably well worth the cost of that. But on my once a month trips to Walmart, I will usually buy normally I'll buy almost all of the lantern mantles that they have available for that specific model. You know, they'll have, you know, 7 or 8 packages on the shelf. And I'm doing this during the regular non-event time, so it's not like I'm going in and buying up everything so nobody else has it. I'll just go out and I'll buy a good stack of them, and then they'll immediately, you know, put them back on the shelf. I'm building up a reserve of the lantern mantles because it doesn't matter how great of a lantern you have and how much fuel you have if you don't have a mantle that will burn that fuel, that will actually, you know, burn the fuel and give off the radiation, the light. So you'll need to make sure that if you have a Coleman lantern, you have plenty of fuel for it, and make sure that you have a good reserve of the lantern mantles because they don't last forever. They can very easily become broken and useless or even dangerous. So if you're going to get any type of Coleman lantern, and they make the gas ones too, the propane ones, either way, you'll need to make sure you have a good reserve of the mantles. I just keep a good stock, like 80 or 90 mantles for each of the lanterns in a nice, sturdy Tupperware container, you know, right where I keep the lanterns. And then they make some other extra parts for them. And once a year, I'll try and pick up some of the extra parts, like the plunger, the pump for the lanterns. And they also make the strikers and stuff for that. Once a year, you can purchase, they're only about $5 or $6 a piece. You can purchase those and keep them in a container along with the lanterns and stuff too, because the pumps go out as well as the little gaskets and stuff on them. And that will make them useless as well. So make sure that you have the spare parts for it. Right now, at this, they're probably coming to the end of it. But right now at Walmart, they still have, last time I was in there, they still had them, the solar-powered yard lights. And that's something you should also be looking into. So we're not going to go over it tonight. That's solar power for a lot of things, especially for lighting. But I will mention this because this is a very easy, inexpensive way to get lighting for yourself. That is the solar-powered lights that they have at places like Walmart right now. They are the solar-powered yard lights. Now, these aren't perfect for everything, but for usually, like right, I think I saw them yesterday for 97 cents a piece. That's for the individual solar-powered yard lights, and I've managed to pick up quite a few of these over the years, and I keep them packaged up on the same shelf with the Coleman gear and stuff. And I think one of the things about that I think is great about them is just that they're inexpensive. Like I said, you can get the each of the lights for about 97 cents. You can and they're solar powered, which means that they're going to recharge themselves. They're bright enough so that you could put two or three on your dinner table, and you would be able to have enough light to eat dinner. You can place them throughout your home, be able to see in the darkness. Now, they're not real bright, but they're going to be bright enough that you could possibly see if there were an intruder enough to make the shot, and certainly enough light that you could probably identify, you know, make it hopefully see the difference between an intruder and a family member. Something that's going to give you some light in the darkness. And as I said, these are really expensive, and certainly they're not the highest quality. And But for 97 cents, they're pretty good. Now, I've had several of these out in the open down at my shooting range. I use them for the for lights to help let folks know how to get to the outhouse. And I've got quite a few stuck in the shower, the primitive shower that we built there, so that people can take a bath in the evenings and be able to at least see where the soap falls when it, you know, if it slips into their hands. And they've been sitting out at the range for 2 or 3 years, and they're still going fine. They've just been sitting out in the middle of the out of the middle of the weather for 2 or 3 years, and they're doing just fine. So, and for 97 cents a piece, that's pretty good. And I've got a drink, one of the old, like 1960s drink carts. You know, the carts that they make that you're supposed to roll into the living room with the drinks and the ice and stuff on it. And you have converted that to a storage rack for them. That way, like a full complement of it, it'll hold almost 80 of them. I can take that and I can roll it out onto the deck in the sunlight. They can charge all day, and then if I need them, I can turn the ones on that I need, and the rest will just maintain their charge. And some of these, the 97-cent ones don't, but some of these, I think they're like $1.40 or something. They make and sell these too. Now you need to get them in the spring when they first start going on sale. But they make these solar yard lights with a rechargeable AA battery in them. You can use it for lighting, or you can use it to recharge your AA batteries. You can take those AA batteries out and use them in something else, in the flashlight, for the radios, etc. You can use them in something else and then stick them back in there, and they're good to go. And when I checked on the pricing of this last time, the each of the individual yard lights with the AA battery in them was cheaper than what you could buy a AA rechargeable battery for, right? So those will work dual purposes. And that's just a way to for you to start to working on your inexpensively working on lighting. Like I said, you can take 3 or 4 or 5 of these, even at 97 cents a piece. They're going to last. They'll last however long they last. Like I said, I've got some that have been going for 3 years. Somebody else told me that they had a couple, and one of them only lasted like 6 months. All right, they'll last however long they last, but. I've had them lasting quite a decent amount of time now, and you can take a bouquet of these and stick them in a vase on your dinner table, and you're able to eat dinner and see what it is you're eating. And I'll tell you that in a grid down situation, there is nothing that causes more anxiety. Have a way to light yourself out of the darkness, okay? And you can say, well, I've got a flashlight in the drawer in the kitchen in case something happens. That's great, but how long is that flashlight going to last? If it's even working now, when was the last time you checked it? Flashlights are another thing, that's certainly something that that you need to figure out is having some way to take your lighting with you. All right, so you can have the cooking. You can do it inexpensively with some gas devices that you've set up. You can get a regular charcoal grill, and you can use a charcoal grill either with charcoal or with some wood that you can get. The only problem with this is that you can figure out ways to safely cook inside with your gas grill. Now, I'm not going to tell you that you should be doing this because it's dangerous. Figuring out how to get the right amount of breathable air inside and doing it in such a way that you don't asphyxiate yourself, you can figure this out. Now, like I said, I'm not telling you to bring your gas grill inside the house, shut all the windows and doors, and cook that way, because that can end up being dangerous for you. But you can figure out a way to do it by putting it near, figuring out which window has the exit draft on your house. And if you open up two windows, one on the windward side and one on the lee side, and you put your grill by the lee side, that means that the air is going to get pulled out of that window, and you can do it that way. With the charcoal and wood grills, that's a lot more dangerous because you're not just burning air, but you're also introducing smoke into your home. And even if you're doing it outside, if you're doing charcoal, it's not as bad. But if you're doing some type of a wood fire, then there's always a chance that you're going to have at least a small, discernible amount of smoke that's going to be coming from it. That might not be a good thing, all right? But it is a possible way to do that. You could use wood to cook your food. Heck, if all else fails, you could always just get a couple of bricks and start a fire and just make it like a campfire, and you could cook your food outside. And you could figure out ways to do this. You could figure out ways to shield the light from escaping, campfire going too far, things like that. You can figure out ways to do it. But you need to figure out the ways to do it now, not when you're having to worry about every other thing. Add this to your primitive day without fire. It's when you have all the stuff turned off, the electricity and the water and everything else. And then grab you a pot and go outside, make your little campfire, cook your food there. Cook it on the gas grill. Cook it on the single burn that you made. There are a lot of ways to do this, and there are certainly ways that you can become very proficient. Tons of devices that you can actually make yourself, where you can use little tiny amounts of combustible material to make your cup of coffee. You can do that with like a little device you make out of a tin can, and just a little tiny fire that would be really hard to be seen. These are things that you should be figuring out how to do now. Now, let's address the very first part of the question, I guess, that I skipped over, and that is if you don't have electricity, if you don't have the utilities, then the part where you flip the switch and the coils heat up, or the ignition device starts snapping and it ignites the gas coming out of the vents. If you don't have the electricity, then that part's not going to work, right? So if you're going to start a fire, or you're going to use your gas cooker, or you're going to use your Coleman lantern, then you're going to need something to do that very first part, which is it is starting the fire. And a lot of times people don't think about this. They think, well, if I need to start a fire, I'll just go get some matches. And maybe you have some. Maybe you'll just say, well, I'll just go get some matches from the store. If you have a store and they're still running, they have matches, that's great. Maybe you can. But that's what everybody's going to be doing. Everybody's going to be looking for the matches to make their fires. the one of the things that you can think about doing is making sure that you have at least a small stockpile of fire starting devices. And I'm not even going to talk tonight about flint and steel or anything about like that. We've done shows before on fire starting, and we'll certainly do some more of them down the road. But tonight we're just going to talk about keeping some things on hand to give you the ability to do it without going through a lot of trouble. And that's going to be something like your inexpensive disposable butane lighters. And you can still get them fairly inexpensively now. You don't have to go and buy the expensive ones at the counter by the cash register. Go to someplace like the Dollar General or any of the dollar stores or Harbor Freight or something like that. Go there and buy the bulk containers of lighters. Dollar General used to have them. They used to have a blister pack of 10 lighters for $2.50. So you could, for $10, you could buy 40 of those lighters, stash them away. It's gone up to $5 now. But still, for $10, you can still get 20 disposable lighters and have them on hand so that you have a way to start fire in your home or to take with you. One of the guys from Serbia, I was talking with him a while back, and he said that's one of the things that people didn't really think about was how are they going to start a fire. They said one of the most coveted barter items was a butane lighter, and then one of the jobs that people figured out how to do. Not very many, but a couple of people, I guess, figured out how to generate combustible gases like methane and stuff like that, and then get them under pressure so that they could refill the lighters. That was a trade and a craft that they could use to support themselves. All right, so people don't realize how important having a fire starting device is. So make sure that that's one of your first things that you get is some good, cheap butane lighters so that you can start a fire either at your home or take some with you, all right? once you have done your day, once you have figured out how to make it through your one day with your water, food, shelter, security, and energy, you can pat yourself on the back. You can pat yourself on the back. You can make a check beside that on your list. And then you can work on the next goal you set for yourself. Maybe 2 days, maybe 3 days, but whatever it is, make sure that you don't stop with the one day. Make sure that you have set that goal, you have met or exceeded it, and then you replace that goal with your next goal, which is being able to provide for yourself and your family for multiple days, and you're going to keep doing this and keep setting additional goals. You'll keep learning ways to do things. For the food, we didn't talk about it tonight. We'll talk about it on its own episode because I think it's really important, and that's things like canning. Canning is not some great complicated mystery. You can very easily teach yourself to can, and you can put away food very inexpensively, and it will be food that you know is 100% safe and healthy because you're the one that picked it out and put it together. We'll go over canning and we'll continue to pound this subject into the ground, because every day there are new techniques, new ideas that come up, and there's certainly plenty of online that you can get this information from. You have the Survival Podcast with Jack Spierko. He is certainly a very talented and knowledgeable person, and he has shows that he does almost every day of the week, and they are downloadable for free to your listening devices. We do about an hour, hour and a half every day, covering everything from how to start a fire to how to run a trap line to how to invest your money safely and correctly, to give you return. So he's got a wide full range of stuff. There are tons of online avenues for teaching yourself. Tens of thousands of YouTube broadcasts that will show you how to use a flint and steel, how to tan a hide, all of this stuff, all the way to how to do canning. Everything you want is on YouTube. And there's certainly plenty of forums that you can go and ask questions on, and people are more than glad to help you. The self-reliance community has always been very, very giving as far as wanting to share information with you that can help you feed, clothe, defend yourself and your loved ones and survive in times of trouble. So spend a little bit of time, and say, you don't have to spend a lot. You can just say, all right, instead of watching this one-hour show I was going to watch on TV tonight, I'm going to devote those same 58 minutes to doing some reading and doing some YouTube video watching on certain skills and techniques that I would like to figure out. And expand your knowledge of it. I'm not any kind of a prophet or a seer or a medium. I can't. There's certainly no way that asking me what I thought was coming in the future would be any better than flipping a coin. The only thing I can tell you is that we're living in very dangerous times right now. Living in very, very dangerous times within the borders of our own country and across the world. The chances of something happening worldwide economically are very high. The chances of something happening economically in our country, some type of financial or economic collapse, are very high. And even if they weren't, like I said, you still got the tornadoes, the snowstorms, and everything else. Do yourself a favor. Start thinking about this. Start figuring out some way that you're going to be able to feed yourself and your family for one day, and then expand that. Figure out the ways to take care of yourself and your loved ones. Because I believe it's criminal not to. The people that think that if something happened to me, because we've got all these different types of emergency services, we've got the government that will come in and rescue us. Oh, listen, ask the folks in New Orleans about that. Ask them how it worked out for them, if they were happy with the government services. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to tell you that the government services are cruel or evil, or that they would hurt you on purpose. I'm just telling you that not to depend on them. It takes the government, it's like a big old huge slow elephant, takes it a while for it to get up and get up on all 4 feet, and then stumble around and find the thing that it needs, and then start slowly ambling to wherever you are. You don't want to be in a precarious situation for 5 to 14 days while you're waiting, or even 24 hours while you're waiting for somebody to save you. Take the initiative, take the responsibility to do it yourself. Make sure that you understand how to take care of yourself, at least in the short term now, and build it out to the long term. All right. Before we go tonight, I want to remind folks that we have that Battlelords USA, that's my company here. If you are in the Texas area, or even if you're not, we have folks flying into some of the courses, the upcoming courses from all over, from California, from Virginia, New York. But we have upcoming courses. We've got August 2nd. We have our pistol craft course, and this is an excellent course for anybody. I don't care what your skill level is. Going out to the range, making several hundred draws from concealed, and practicing moving offline. While you bring your sights up onto the target so that you can apply 3 to 4 rounds per second onto your target, and then very quickly scan and maintain situational awareness. Going through a full day of this is something that everybody needs. I don't care how often you shoot. I always make sure that I go through the course working there instructing, I try and go through as much of it as I can so that I am, number one, that I'm making sure that I understand what the folks that are attending are having to do, also so that I'm keeping my skills current. That's August 2nd. That's a one-day pistol craft course. I need about 500 rounds of ammunition. August 9th through the 13th, we're having our precision rifle sniper course. And this is a 5-day course. It's the absolute best value that you will ever get right now, because there's 5 full days of instruction for $500. The nearest thing that I've seen that I've taken as far as precision rifle course was a 3-day course for about $1,400. And there's no way that you're going to get the same benefits, because there's just no way. I mean, you've got the extra 2 days of instruction. And let me tell you now, too, that this upcoming course will be the last time that you can get this specific course with a specific instructor, which is John Hawes. John Hawes is a graduate of 5 different sniper schools, and he is a veteran of Afghanistan. You're not going to be learning these skills and techniques from somebody who learned them at a course somewhere and is just passing that training on to you. He doesn't just talk the talk, he walked the walk. It's what he did for a living, was a shooter for Uncle Sam. And he's not one of the guys that are the, I can't talk to you about what I did, be classified. He's more than willing to speak to you about the stuff that he's done. It's all verifiable. And to use that experience in order to help you better understand how to make the shot at distance. We'll be teaching you how to use your MilDot scopes, how to determine range estimation. We'll be doing stress shoots. You'll be getting classes in wind, how to apply wind correction to your shots. And this is the 9th to the 13th of August, $500. You can go to our website, www.battleroadusa.com, and for more information, and you can contact me through the website. On the 16th and 17th, which is the weekend following the Precision Rifle Course, we'll be running a two-day stalking and camouflage course. Now, this, don't think that that if you're not law enforcement or military that this is no good for you, because that's false. Even if you're not planning on shooting anything ever, you might just end up in a situation where it's to your benefit to be able to move from one point to another with the least chance of you being seen. And that's one of the things that that you're going to come away from this course with, and that is the instruction in how to move through and across terrain and then into your shooting position and be able to remain there undetected until the opportunity to take the shot presents itself. And this is a valuable skill. And like I said, not just for military or law enforcement. If you're a hunter, then this is something you'd want to know, how to actually correctly perform your stalk when you are stalking for that deer or that elk or hog or coyote, whatever. This is a very valuable course. This course is $200, and it's immediately following the precision rifle sniper course that's upcoming. And it's not just, I think it's going to be a little bit of a fun course in and of itself, because from the description of the website, it'll be an intensive hands-on course covering the aspects of camouflage, concealment, movement under observation, and the construction of a firing position. Day one will begin with a detailed class on camouflage and movement techniques, immediately followed by concealment exercises involving no movement. Now, after the concealment exercises, the students will then move into completing a stalk against the lead instructor. This is where you're going to be trying to stalk up on John Hawes, and this will be you moving under observation, trying to get to your firing position where you can set up, and actually you'll be firing a blank, but firing you'll be moving under, stalking up to John, trying to get close enough to him to make the shot, and then you will be graded on your stalking abilities according to the United States Army's Sniper School Standards. On day two, you'll have three different stalks against John Hawes, the instructor, with the last two stalks being live fire stalks. That means each time you will make a stalk, and it'll be conducted in a similar stalk that you made. But at the culmination of each stalk, you'll actually be firing at a steel target that will be put up there, in the location of where the instructor was, and you'll engage it with one live round from your positions in order to test your stalking skill. All right. After each of the stalks, we'll conduct an after action on each of the stalks. We'll tell you how you did, where your strong points were, where your weak points were, any mistake you made, stuff like that. So this is a great course. We'll also be teaching you how to build a ghillie suit, how to maintain your camouflage, I'm very excited about this course. It's going to be a great course. Now, on the August 23rd, we'll have the fighting shotgun course here at our location. That's to teach you how to use your shotgun. Everybody's got a shotgun. Everybody says, if something happens, I'm going to use a shotgun to defend my home, myself. That's great, but do you really know how to do that? You know how to make a round selection or a round change out of your magazine? Do you know how to get 3 to 4 shots per a second out of that shotgun? Do you know what your slug zero is? And then on the September 25th and 26th, we'll have the first of our Ghosts of Goliad Rifle Marksmanship and Texas History classes. I'm excited about this, too. We're doing a seven-month run, and we'll be teaching the fundamentals of rifle marksmanship. This is in the baby course. This is in the basic course. This is the fundamentals. And at the same time, we'll be teaching you about the seven-month run for independence that the Texans took in order to gain their independence from Mexico and to begin the Republic of Texas. On October 11th, get ready. Here we come. It's the Zombie Destruction Run and Gun Biathlon. That's a 4.5-mile looping course with 8 shooting stations for rifle and pistol and obstacles in between each station that the runners have to negotiate. All right, guys, that's going to finish it up for this edition. Please remember that once something happens, you're not going to be able to start your prep. It's going to be all over. So make sure that you get started now and that you start working on it. God bless everybody. Thank you, TMZ, for running the board. We'll see you guys.
Young, my teacher told me that I was free, yeah. And as a child, I grew up programmed by TV, yeah. And as a teenage boy, I found out just how free is free. Things are